Without Bob today, Mark Folliwell here.
Hey.
Of course, the great Donovan. Gribs, Groobs, and Seabass, and joining us now, from the greatness of The Wire, it is, well, I guess it's not Prop Joe. It's Robert Chu. Or Robert F. Chu.
Yes,
should we call you Robert F.? What would you prefer, sir?
Robert's fine, man.
All right, Robert. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. Thank you all for having me here, man.
It's wonderful to have you on the show. The Wire is... We have been on board since episode one. We feel many have jumped on board since then. But it's our all-time favorite. I'm sure that you hear that a lot.
Yeah, I do. I'm quite surprised that it's still going as strong as it is around the world, man. There are people on Facebook that tag me through other countries like Africa and Germany saying they're just getting season four or they're just getting season five and they're in love with the show. And that amazes me, man.
Like when you started... When season one was rolling out, or when you first got involved in The Wire, did you have any idea what it would turn into or what you were doing?
No, I really had no idea, quite frankly. They hired me as a day player for one episode, and after I completed that, that was it. I went back to teaching. I was planning on going back to New York for some more auditions, but they called me back and said they might want the character to be reoccurring. So after that, I rented, or rather I went to down to the studio office and asked could I watch the episodes to catch up with what's going on with the show, because I didn't watch it before I was hired for it. And then after that, I just caught up on everything. I'm like, wow, this is a really good show.
So what episode was your first?
My first.
How many episodes
was, episode 9 in season 1.
Okay. It's really fun. We have just, in fact, they just aired the last one, right, Donovan?
They did, yeah. They replayed it on the DirecTV 101 network, and
yeah.
Season 5, Episode 10 was played last night, the final one. I don't know if they're going to start over, but it's just been a pleasure to watch again. You know, it's almost like watching it the first time. There's so much going on in every single episode that you forget what happened, because honestly, Robert, I forgot you had taken the bullet. I didn't even remember that the first time around.
Yeah, I guess with everybody still keeping it alive and fresh, it's hard to think of a character, any character, dying. You know, when you think of Stringer Bell, you don't think of him as being a dead character.
Right, right.
You don't think of Snoop being a dead character. You know what I mean? It's like we're all still alive and fresh in everybody's mind.
Now, it's interesting to read about all the different actors who read for the different roles before they got their actual role. Now, was that the only role you read for? Proposition Joe?
That was the only role I read for, and amazingly, I thought I was reading, I thought they gave me the wrong side, because when I went into audition, there were about seven other brothers there, you know, dressed in suits, immaculately groomed, and jewelry, and ties, and leather shoes on, and I'm in there in a sweatsuit, you know, I'm thinking, I'm coming to read for some school teacher or janitor or something, you know. Pat Moran was the casting director. She wasn't quite clear. She just said, I want you to come down and read for this older guy named Joe. You know, when you hear the name Joe, you think of a friendly guy. I get in there, and I'm like, okay, I got to be reading the wrong size here. But when I get in and read, and then they cast me, I'm like, well, I don't understand this process. Why was I typecast with all these guys who are totally not my type? And it wasn't until 2 years later that I figured out that Joe Stewart was an actual real person, who was this dashingly debonair, handsome guy who was a ladies' man. And I'm like, well, why did y'all cast me? I'm like 400 pounds and over the hill right now. But they said they liked what I brought to the table. And that the rest is history. So I guess it's not always about what the character looks like.
So it was originally a one-day job?
A one-day job.
You were just going to appear on the playground or something like that?
At the basketball game.
Oh, right, right.
He was dealing drugs on the east side, and the Y was basically dealing with the west side.
Okay, so that was the annual game between the two sides?
Barksdale and Stewart, you know, east side, west side game.
Okay, so, but that's an amazing story. You were originally cast for, that says a lot about you. and your magnetism on the screen, I guess, or something, just because a one-day thing, that's what they had it all ready for. And you end up being one of the most iconic characters. I think of Prop Joe, Omar, String, you know.
Yeah, Stringer, Avon, that's about it, yeah.
And you were in charge of the whole group. Boy, that's got to blow your mind.
Yeah, it still does to this day, man. It still blows my mind.
I was reading and I don't know how much you get into reading, you know, reviews of the show or reviews of your work, but there was actually a pretty lengthy review that was written by a guy in London at some time, I think, close to the end of the show, who said, and this is also mentioned on your Wikipedia page, too, that you drew acclaim for being able to handle the character's verbose dialogue and the sympathy that he draws, that Prop Joe draws, while playing a bad guy. And to me, I would think as an actor, that's one of the great compliments that you can be paid when someone is saying, this guy plays his role so well that people sitting at home that know it's just a TV show get invested in this guy's personality, they get invested in his well-being, they root for him, they don't root for him, whatever the case may be, but they end up getting drawn to that character.
Yeah, man, because I tell you, when the reviews and the letters and the comments came in on the internet about, you know, my death, how people felt, that surprised me, man. I really had no idea that I had that kind of interest in the character or that kind of following, you know, because you just don't think of Joe I never thought of Joe as a popular character. I thought of him as an intricate part of the story, you know, the villain that's on the sneak tip that'll sneak up on you, but I never thought of him as being popular. So when I start reading all this, and I only read stuff once and then that's it, you know, I don't like to dwell on anything. I don't even watch the episodes anymore. I watch them once and that's it, because I like to learn from my mistakes or the good things I've done to improve myself, and that's it. That really really surprised me.
How do you find out as an actor? Like, is it at the beginning of the season did you know you're going to get it, or is it like one day you get handed the script?
You know, here's the funny thing. I talked to Idris Elba, who plays Stringer Bell, during the time that they were filming his death episode, and he told me, well, he knew for some time they were going to kill him off, like maybe 2 or 3 months or so. I didn't know until the script came out 4 days before shooting, and it wasn't even in the script. They left the last page off, and I get a call from one of the producers, Nina, and one of the writers, Ed Barron, says, I have some good news and some bad news. I said, okay. I forgot what the good news was. The bad news is you get killed. So, the good news was, this is your episode. You're in almost every scene. I'm like, oh, wow, yeah, I like this. Because most of the time you just see Joe in a snippet.
Yeah.
There. But this was my episode. And then he said, the bad news is I would kill you.
It's your last one.
The last one. And I was kind of speechless for a second, but I thought if that ever came up, I would really try to fight for Joe. I said, no, you got to let Joe get away. He's the only character that should get away. But I didn't say anything. I said, Ed, I trust you. You and David are two of the greatest writers on the planet. Whatever you decide is fine with me. And that's what we did.
Did you ever meet the real Proposition Joe?
No, he's actually dead.
Okay.
So I guess they really followed suit on this. He was killed he was in the wrong place at the wrong time, of all things. Just like Joe was, he didn't get out of his house soon enough.
Drug related?
No, actually, it was a stick-up. Somebody was robbing a store that he just happened to be in.
Hmm.
And
that happens on the streets, Donovan.
Yeah,
that's,
a lot. Yeah.
Main streets.
That's tough. So did you, since they told you so close to the time that you filmed it, did you get to use that kind of as
Oh, yeah, because emotionally? Like, it was kind of a shock. Anytime an actor is going to be out of work, I'm like, oh, man. So I felt that. I felt that pain, and I used it in the scene. I'm like, man, I'm not going to be getting no more income. I got to start looking again.
This is Robert Chu on with us. Prop Joe from The Wire, of course. So before The Wire, we also watched The Corner, and I didn't realize before, you know, we started kind of researching Robert Chu, I didn't realize you were on The Corner. And I've seen it three times. I've watched that miniseries. It's a HBO miniseries which preceded The Wire.
Yeah.
Which was by the same guys that created The Wire, right? Homicide.
David Simon. Mm-hmm. David Simon, yeah.
And I didn't realize you were in Homicide. I've seen every episode of that as well.
Yeah, I was in the seventh season opening three-part episode with James Earl Jones and Jeffrey Wright.
So that's where they first got wind of you or kind of knew who you were. And in fact, you're from Baltimore?
From Baltimore, born and raised, but I lived in New York for 6 years and then I moved back.
But that lends a lot to the reality of that series, right?
Oh, most definitely.
They tried to get they tried to get local guys, so does that mean you had like the authentic, was it West Side or East Side? I'm sorry.
East Side.
Dialect?
Yeah, but actually a lot of people think there were tons of Baltimore actors cast, and they really weren't. The majority of the leading actors, I say 90%, were from out of state.
Hell, they're from England, right?
Idris is from England.
Yeah, and McNulty.
Yeah, McNulty. The only actors from Baltimore were the people, a lot of the kids, and maybe four of the guys from the Knights of the Round Table. You know, the co-op?
Right, right.
I call them Knights of the Round Table. But like Slim Charles is from D.C., that's in Maryland, Fat Face Rick, and myself, and Snoop. Everybody else is from out of state. New York, L.A., all over the place, man.
Is that reality, like that co-op type thing? You think the drug dealers really rented
I would say no. I don't think that's real. If it is, it's very secret. I've never heard of it or I've never even imagined it. But everything else on that show is 100% authentic. But it's not as widespread as it would appear. It's just that you have a show focusing on that small pocket of Baltimore.
Now, I read where you kind of took the younger kids under your wing to kind of school them on the acting thing since they were kind of raw. That seems like that's a pretty good deal, man, for you to kind of guide them the right way so the series can come off realistic.
Yeah, because the four young men that were casting those Randy and Namon and Michael and
Dookie. Yeah.
They were all from out of state. Dookie's from Maryland, but he's not from Baltimore. And I was a drama and musical director coach for a youth theater program for the last 10 years. So Nina, one of the producers, hired me to work with them pre-filming. And those four guys were the easiest young men to ever work with. They were so multi-talented, man, that it was a breeze. And the rest of the kids that had smaller parts, like 22 of them were from my group. They all had to audition, you know, Pat and... didn't play any favorites in casting. They had to be the real thing. And 22 of my kids landed roles.
I always wondered about the cover prop Joe used, the clock repair shop. That seemed kind of weird to me. Like, how much business is there? How much money is there in clock repair?
Well, there used to be a lot of money in it, but with technology going the way it is, there's no money. So I guess that he used that as a front, because most businesses like that here are run by elderly men. I don't know if they're using it as cover, as I'm not into the drug game, but I would assume so. You know, if you see a shop like that, you can be assured it's just for collectors or for other things.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to ask you about as far as the drug game, because I know Snoop comes from the actual streets, but are you like, you're off in the suburb, or what's your...
No, I'm from, born and raised in the city.
Oh, okay.
It just depends on, there are many factors. You can either fall into it or you don't. You have good upbringing, you don't. Even if you have good upbringing, you can fall into it. I was not drawn to that as a child, and never have been, never will be.
But you saw it out there, huh?
Oh, most definitely. I mean, I can remember characters like Prop Joe. There were elderly men who sat on the marble step on the corner, and people always came up to them, handing them things. They were running numbers games. Because when I was a kid, drugs were not accessible to as they are today to get in my neighborhood. If you drank, it was taboo. Oh man, he a wino, you know. That's my remembrance of drugs. Or marijuana, you know, that's something like, wow, where'd they get that from? That's my experience with drugs as far as I can remember as a kid. And people like Joe would sit on the corner and just run their numbers racket, and you gave them much respect when you walked past. How you doing, Mr. Joe? How you doing, Mr. Clark? And that's it.
How old are you?
You know, they say actors don't give their age out, but no, I'm 50.
Okay, so you got your, I guess, big break pretty late then.
Yeah, pretty late. But I have been doing theater for the last 20 years. So I got my equity card when I was 25 years old. And I've been doing theater ever since.
What do you got going now?
Right now I'm just auditioning. I have a pilot in the making, another HBO pilot, but it's not a go yet. They're trying to market and get more names to sell it to HBO, so I can't say too much about it.
Yeah, did they even ask you to be in Treme? You got a lot of wire guys in Treme.
Right.
I was asked and not asked at the same time. David told me to do a lot of research on New Orleans before the project even came out. And I did, and then the next thing you know, there's a show on New Orleans, but no calls here, so that's just the business, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes you change your mind about things.
Do you get paid still from The Wire or no?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we get residuals, but, you know, that's a whole nother ball of beans right there.
What do you mean?
Just a whole nother ball of beans.
I know. I'm asking you to translate that. For...
Residuals is actually what it sounds like, the residuals.
Like a teeny, wow. Teeny little trickling
teeny,
of...
tiny amount of money.
Like, so you can't retire?
Oh, no, you can't retire residuals unless you were making money like McNulty or Barksdale. They were, you know, those were top paid actors on the show. You had about maybe 15 of them that really got good money.
Yeah, but you became... You said right. you were hired as a day player or whatever, but you...
That's a set wage.
Yeah, but you became a regular guy then, right? You certainly
no,
got...
I was never a regular. I was always a day player.
Really?
Yeah, really.
Prop Joe. That's like I said, that's one of the iconic... When you mention The Wire, it's McNulty, Bunk, Prop Joe, Omar. You know, that's... well, that's crazy,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, I'm glad you said...
So they treat you like poot.
Well, no, in all fairness, I can't say that they treated me like that. I mean, I just didn't have good business representation because I was managing myself. And that's a lesson learned on my part. You may have thought that as good of a job I was doing, they might have said, well, let's do this, let's do that. But that's the business.
Yeah. I guess even when, like, again, to credit to your abilities or just what you would portray, even if you were in for only 5 seconds, I would think I saw a lot of Prop Joe that episode, you know? You stood out.
Appreciate that.
So as far as the series, that's the whole thing. McNulty was probably the main character, right, out of the whole thing?
I've always considered, you know, the whole show revolves around McNulty's world. You know, even though he was a white character, I think he was the center.
He was kind of the center of episode or season one, and it really threw people off when they threw him on the boat. And then...
Yeah.
They kind of ignored him in season two, and I feel like that's when it started to morph, and you could start to say the main character is Baltimore.
Right, exactly. That's what they did.
But he was the thread.
Exactly.
And just, okay, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Robert, we really appreciate you coming on today, man, and we would ask you for one last thing. If you could identify yourself and say, I never listened to Bob and Dan on The Ticket, we'd appreciate it.
Okay, my name is Robert F. Chu, formerly Prop Joe of The Wire, and I never listened to Dan and Bob on The Ticket show. Is that right?
That's it. You got it, man. Thank you very much, man. We really appreciate it.
You want to? You got anything crazy like website or Twitter you want to plug or no?
Nothing at all, man. I'm a homebody, you know? I'm just glad you all thought of me and asked me to, you know, come on your show.
Hey, how do we get connected with Prop Joe?
Steven. Steven hooked me up with Prop Joe.
Is that your manager or something?
No, he's an agent in California, an agency in California that I have some information out there, and they sort of roam around for me.
Hey, okay. And anytime you need something put up on a show or something like that, feel free to give us a call, man.
Oh, thank you so much, guys.
Maverick tickets.
Oh, my God. All right. You coming to town. We'd love to have you in studio and all that, but just keep in touch.
I sure will.
I appreciate it, man.
Great to meet you. There he is, Robert Chu of The Wire. Prop Joe!
Yeah, that gets me out the green man suit for now, baby.
That's right. That's your first guest booked for the Guest Booking League.
How'd I do with my one question?
It's great.
You knocked it out of the park.
Yeah.
You kind of stole the interview.
Yeah, kind of did. That's what I thought.
Center of attention.
The Prop Joe of the Prop Joe interview.
I hate the fact that I got lost on The Wire. Because after the first season, and McNulty was having all sorts of crazy problems with his wife or girlfriend or...
Wife.
Some zaniness like that. And then The Wire just got off my radar, and I never went back to it.
It's well worth.
Obviously, I missed out.
You're missing out, man.
Yep, dive into those DVDs.
Yeah, it's too bad in this day and age there's no way to actually watch them again.
It's gone forever. I know, it's gone forever.
It's not like you can watch
it again. Back. Time is pretty much left all opportunity to catch up with that. So.
All right, well, there you go. Prop Joe, that means you have a guest.
Yep.
I have a guest. Who currently, if the game ended today, would be sitting at the ballpark wearing Green Man outfit?
Groobs, Seabass, and TC are all in Green Man outfit right now.
Seabass, do you want to be in that threesome? I have confidence that Seabass does not want to be with Groobs and TC.
Well, he'll look the best in his suit.
In Green Man, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe you want to go out there so you can be
so
like,
you look like you're in shape.
We got a line on Billy D.
Billy D. Williams?
That.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, what can he be doing?
I saw him on TV yesterday.
Lando
that's a good story. All right, it's 220.